Welcome to In Her Shoes. I'm Lindsay Peoples, and I'm editor-in-chief of The Cut. On this show, I get to talk to people that we love and admire, or some that we just find interesting. We'll explore how they found their path and what maybe have gotten in their way, and how they brought others along now that they've arrived. This past weekend was Hollywood's biggest night, and of course, best looks. Behind the most striking on the carpet was the image architect himself, La Roach. Then, suddenly, he posted that he was retiring. That sent the internet into a rightful tizzy, with everyone asking, why was the Beyoncé of styling retiring? So on this episode of In Her Shoes, we step inside his shoes with an exclusive interview featuring La Roach, giving us the details on his retirement, what led up to this moment in his life, and what's coming next. So let's get into it first. Are you retiring?
I'm definitely retiring from celebrity styling. I'm not retiring from fashion because I love it so much, but celebrity styling, being of service to other people in a way that I've been of service to them, I'm retiring from that.
You're just coming off of dressing some of the biggest celebrities at the Vanity Fair Oscar party. You also won the CFDA award for best stylist. You're at the top of your game right now. So why do this now?
Isn't it always best to leave when you're on the top? The real reason is that it's been building for a while because I looked up one day and honestly realized that I'm not happy, you know? I'm not happy, and I haven't been happy, honestly, in a really long time. The combination of everything that's been happening in my career these last few days kind of just really pushed me over the edge and just like, you know what? Like, I've done everything. I'm very grateful that I've been able to move and climb in this industry the way I have, but I can't say that I didn't do that without suffering, you know? And I think as Black people in this country, we are raised and kind of is embedded in us to suffer, right? We feel like to be successful, we have to suffer. You know, you suffer through things to get to the other side. You know, you suffer through earth to get to heaven. You know what I mean? And so I think that's just in our DNA as African-Americans, and I've been suffering for years. And yesterday when I made that post and shit, it's like it's been so long ago, but it was literally the day before yesterday, yeah. Monday. And I made that post because I felt like I couldn't breathe. And me releasing that and letting the world know that I'm done with this was the first time that whole week that I really felt like I took a breath, a deep breath. And yeah, it's like, I don't want to suffer no more. I don't want to be unhappy. I don't want to be at the beck and call of people and their teams. And yeah, I want to take some time and figure out, you know, how to live.
Yeah. What was going through your mind when you put up that Instagram post?
So that morning, I got a call from one of my clients, and it was her publicist, and then they connected somebody from a brand, you know, that I'm supposed to do a project with. And, you know, last week for us, Oscars week, building up to Vanity Fair Oscars is some of the most stressful times in the world. And I've always been a stylist that always did multiple clients. So I'm trying to prepare for multiple clients that week. And even, you know, I had a lot of pressure because of Meg. It was her first time coming back, and anybody seeing her since the trial, I wanted to make her feel secure and comfortable and make her feel and look as perfect as possible so that she can have the strength to do what she had to do, you know? So it was all these things. And I found myself on the phone with these three women, and I felt like I was defending myself because the one woman from the brand was like, oh, he's not communicating, and, you know, you're not going to have a dress and all these things. And it was just a lot of like things that were not true, you know? And, you know, that's how we lose clients as stylists. Like, somebody from the brand would say something to the publicist, the publicist say something to the client, and then it's this thing. And I thought I had a really strong relationship with this client, and I thought that she knew that my goal always is to protect my clients. And at that moment, I just didn't feel like I was being protected, you know, because there's no one who can ever say that they've worked with me that I didn't put my whole heart and soul into them, or that I left them hanging and they didn't have a dress. You know, it just, it's never happened. No one can ever say that about me. You know, and I was like, okay, yeah, whatever. We'll do whatever. We'll work it out. And then I got off the phone. I was like, I'm literally depleted from the day before. You know, I'm an extreme empath, and everything, I give everything to the point. After that night, I literally was numb. I bumped into some people. I could barely finish a sentence. It's hard for me to describe my work and my process. And people who work with me know that I'm a dreamer, right? Like, I dream the look. I dream the hair, the makeup, every accessory. I have to see everything. On those days, I book a car and I drive around and see every one of my clients. You know, and I try to schedule it so I'm there to zip the dress. You know what I mean? That's important to me. There's other stylists, and no shade to anyone. You know, they send their assistants and it is what it is, right? No, I'm like, I need to feel it, you know? And so I was depleted. And then that call was very early, the very next day after all that. And then one of the clients that I dressed that night. And it was just like, I got off the phone and I felt like I'm still fighting. I'm still defending myself. And one thing people who work with me also know is I don't like to be managed or feel like I'm being chastised. You know what I mean? Like, that just doesn't work for me or my personality. And especially when I feel like I'm giving so much. And I'm doing a job. I'm getting paid to do a job. And that's, you know, the real of it. But the care and the love that goes into me to do my job, I just feel like I should sometimes be a little bit more taken care of.
Did people reach out to you? Did your clients reach out to you? What has the past couple of days been like?
I've gotten so much love. And then I think some people, you know, they want what they want. They're like, well, what does this mean for me? I'm like, it means you have to get another stylist. It's really weird because people are like, oh, it's a PR stunt, or he's just throwing a tantrum. And it's like, no, I'm not. This is real. Like, it's real. I don't want to suffer anymore. I don't want to suffer.
That's real. I know you personally, and I know that you've talked a lot about how your upbringing is so different than most people in fashion. Yeah. As a child, you went to bed hungry. You've always worked so hard that I think people just don't understand of why you work the way you work. Yeah. How has that played into this feeling of you still feeling like you're suffering?
I was having dinner with some other stylists, and they're like, you don't have to work like that. Like, why do you work like that? Why do you put yourself through that? And I was just like, well, if you've never experienced what it feels like to be a child and to go to bed and cry because you're still hungry, because there's just nothing else, you will never understand the reason why I work that way. You know, I'm really a street kid. Like, my mother was really addicted to drugs and alcohol, and I was the oldest of five. And, you know, she decided one day to take my brothers and sisters and to leave me, right? And so I literally lived in an abandoned house. Well, it was our house, but it became abandoned, like the no utilities and all that. So I've always had to figure out, because she also told me when she left me, well, if you don't work, you don't eat. Right. And so when you tell a 13, 14 year old that means you have to do whatever you have to do to survive and to eat, you know. And so that mentality never left me, you know. And I literally survived from the kindness of other people and being a hustler and right, you know, and like going to the supermarket and like pushing the cart back and keeping the quarter, or helping people, you know, put their groceries in the car, you know what I mean? So I've always had that feeling of you have to figure it out. You have to work. You have to work. You have to work. And then that I know a lot of people have this, that feeling of it could be all over tomorrow. Mm-hmm. So get as much as you can today. And so that's why, you know, people always say, well, you could just do Zendaya and be successful, whatever. But for me, that wasn't enough. And then I also had that burden of showing people, like, I'm not a one-trick pony. Like, you know, I can do more than her and make my magic with other people as well, other than Zendaya.
Right. I mean, you said in your Instagram post that you were tired of the lies and false narratives. Yeah. What did you mean by that?
So what happens with me a lot is that I end up having a real connection with the client, you know, and very quickly it becomes a thing where they trust me and understand me and we have this relationship. And that's not the way it goes, especially in Hollywood. You have the gatekeepers, right? You have the person that's in between you and a client and, you know, all the scheduling and, you know, you have to talk to this person to talk to this person. And I think what happens is a lot of times they become intimidated by the relationships I'm able to have with the clients personally. And so what happens is it becomes a thing like I just don't hear from the client anymore, like, or I'm booked for jobs and then all of a sudden I'm released. And then, you know, I'll wait and I'll bump into the client, the talent at a party or an event or whatever. And I'm like, and I'm always like, hey, what happened? I haven't heard from you. And they're like, oh, yeah, yeah. You know, I know my team reached out a few times, but you were busy. Our schedules didn't match up. Or, you know, the whoever said that you were way too expensive. Or, oh, he's never going to, you know, treat you the way he treats Zendaya. You're going to get what she doesn't want. And that's not true because none of my clients ever look the same. Like, I don't use edits. I don't, like, walk around with suitcases of edits that Zendaya didn't want and offer them to other people. You know, so it's that. And it's always those narratives. And I've lost a bunch of clients that I really care for and really wanted to work with because of the gatekeepers.
Right. So let's take it from the beginning to just lay the groundwork, I think, of how did you even get into fashion and what was that experience like?
So when I talk about being from the streets and kind of hustling my way, what happened was I started, out of necessity, I started to go and shop at the thrift store because it was something that was familiar for me from my childhood. And I just kind of made my way back. And it was so crazy because this was the height of girlfriends. And I saw this purse, this long, like, clutch from the 50s. And, you know, I was like, oh my God, that's a Joan Clayton clutch, you know? And so I just started buying stuff and collecting stuff. And one day I had it all in the trunk of my car. And one of my girlfriends, she was like, oh my God, that bag. She's like, oh, what are you gonna do with that? Can I buy it from you? And so that turned into, you know, me going to the thrift store, changing a hem or like cinching a waist of a dress. And, you know, I've always hung with a lot of beautiful women and having them all come in. We had these little parties. So that got me into selling vintage. Then I eventually had a brick and mortar store in Chicago. Then it was like the stylist thing started to happen. And I knew stylists, I knew of Misa Hilton and June Ambrose and those things, but that felt different to me to what I was being introduced to. I was being introduced to the Hollywood side of styling. And then Rachel Zoe came around, that show came around, and I was just was like, I want that. And so that's how, when I came to Hollywood, that was the goal, to be able to go sit front row at fashion shows and to know the designers. And I remember one episode, she went back to say hello to Mr. Armani. And I just thought that was like, I'm like, I want that life. You know, I want that career. And so I modeled or tried to model the things that I was manifesting to myself.
Okay. I mean, obviously, your hustle has been a grind, but we often talk about nepotism in the industry. So what was that like for you to be able to actually hustle and get clients versus see other people get clients and get booked on your early days without much effort?
Well, I think I was able to do it my own way. And I also had someone that we had made a promise to each other that we would do everything in our power to elevate each other. And that's Zendaya. The way that we came into the industry, nobody wanted to touch either one of us. Like, nobody wanted to lend me clothes. Nobody wanted to dress her. Because at that time, Disney girls wasn't considered real actresses. So we, you know, pinky swore to each other that, you know, I would do my part, she would do her part, and we would do it together. And I think that allowed me to circumvent all the other ways that people become successful, the nepotism. You know, I've never assisted, never interned. And I kind of fought my way and hustled my way. Like, you know, I think the famous story is that I will only present Zendaya in clothes that other people had worn, because at that time the weeklies were like a big thing, who wore it best. And I figured out, you know, it's about press. It's about whoever gets the most press gets the dress. And so I just kept figuring it out. You know, I just kept using everything I learned on the streets to figure it out. But the nepotism, especially on the Hollywood side, is so strong because these stylists, these, you know, white female stylists, they grew up with these white publicists and agents, and they went to summer camp, and you know what I mean? And it's this network that I was able to penetrate. If we use the Oscars as an example, right? So every year, the industry knows the girls that's going to have a movie that's going to be in the running, right? Those girls, when they come in, like, especially when it's their first film and they're new or whatever, they come in and they're all automatically introduced to one of the 10, right? And so to be a stylist at my level and get to that level, you have to be able to work with one of those type of girls, right? That doesn't happen for Black stylists. You can look at the landscape and you can look and see the Black stylists that were able to reach a certain height is because of Black talent, right? That's why it hurts me so bad when I see a black talent work with a white stylist, is because they have everything else. Like, all we have is you for the most part. And those women have everything else and everybody else. So it's like two bookstores next to each other and they have the exact same books, but you choose to go to the bookstore that's owned by the white person. You know what I mean? It doesn't make sense for me, because we cannot elevate and expand without the black talent. I was able to do it because, one, the way I work, I think, is different, and the way I see my job is different. Also because of music, because Ariana Grande gave me a shot when I was very green. Yeah. You know, Ariana tries, but that's the music is different from Hollywood. Ari gave me a shot. And then Celine Dion called me and changed my fucking life. So the industry had no other choice but to respect me and to let me in, because I had did it a different type of way. I was green. Like, I was so green. And they literally trusted me and gave me a shot. And so then, and then Zendaya becoming who she is. So I had the best of both worlds, actually. You can look at the landscape of Hollywood stylists, like look at everybody who was nominated and all that, and see who the stylist was, and then go back and look last year and see everybody who was nominated, who the stylist was. It's the same group. It's the same group of women. Yeah.
I mean, there's Zendaya, there's Anya Taylor-Joy, Ariana Grande, Hunter Schafer, Kerry Washington, Celine Dion, Priyanka Chopra, Anne Hathaway. I'm missing a lot of people, but I'm naming a lot of people because you've completely changed the narrative. Yeah. And you've changed their careers. You've changed what people think about fashion and styling. And I don't think that people also understand just how difficult your job is, and that it's not just pulling a look. What does it look like start to finish, and paint a picture for me of how it looks just as you're consulting on more than just what they're wearing and everything that you're doing.
When I started working with Anne Hathaway, I was the first black stylist that was working with A-list white talent. And it was a big deal, right? It was a big deal in the community of black stylists. I think what it did was show the industry that we are just as talented and we can do talent other than black girls. That was a really important moment in my career, and it was a really important moment for other people's careers. It just wasn't happening. It just absolutely wasn't happening. And, you know, I didn't dress Anne at the beginning. I dressed Anne when Anne is Anne, you know. Anne is, you know, Oscar winning, like, and it's a movie star, right? And so that, what that did was gave actually other people hope that, you know, and other stylists that they can do it too. And I think we saw, you know, Jason Bowden go on and style Angelina Jolie, which was, see, you people don't understand, like, it's a pack of us, right? A very small pack of us. And every time we have a win, one of us have a win, it feels like it's a win for everybody else. Because at the end of the day, everybody wants the most successful career and the most diverse career that they can have, right? And everybody wants the opportunities. And unfortunately, you get more opportunities when you get to the place where you're dressing white women. Just like everything else in this country, right? You're validated. Like, even my career, like, I'm validated by white establishments. I've never been invited to the BET Awards. I've never been given an award by Essence or NAACP. I wasn't even invited to NAACP with all that was in there. Like, I've never been invited, you know? I've never been invited. I've never been celebrated by my own people. Like, so what I'm saying is that it doesn't matter until you're validated by the white establishment. And I've been, you know, lucky to get that validation. But it would mean so much more to me to be validated and appreciated from my own people. Yeah.
But what does that look like specifically when you're working with these big A-list people? Because it's not just picking out a look for this premiere. Like, you're consulting on so much. So what does that look like overall?
There's a theory in psychology that says, it's called the Gestalt theory, I think. It said the whole is greater than the sum of the parts. And I have to control the whole, right? Because again, it comes from my vision and my dreams, and I see it, right? And so I have to see it in real life the way I see it in my mind. So, you know, it's exhausting if you have a client in London and it's, you know, 3 a.m. in LA and you have to be up and be alert and talk to hair and makeup about the look and make sure that the earring is right and all that. And, you know, people say, well, you don't have to do all that. I was like, I do, because that's my crazy, right? And it's also my vice. Like, I don't do drugs. I don't party. I don't have a boyfriend. I don't have a dog. I don't have any kids. Like, it's literally all that I have, you know?
But you also consult so much on image overall. Yeah. It's not just... Yeah. The specific of clothing. Yeah. I think it's also this career. Yeah.
I have to be able to create a narrative. Right. And I'm just a storyteller, honestly, Lindsay. Like, that's, at the end of the day, I am a storyteller, and I use the clothes as the words to get across the narrative, get across the story. And yeah, I do sit with clients and talk about the way that they will present the clothes on the carpet and the posing. And I want you to feel like you're Dorothy Dandridge, and, you know, this, the way you touch your hair and the way you bevel your, you know what I mean? Like, yeah, I do all of that. And when I'm really close to my clients, yes, we do talk about career moves and brands and that type of stuff. But then that's another thing that the gatekeepers don't like. You know what I mean? They don't like that, you know, it's that I'm going to make this amount of money for consulting about the whole thing, you know? So, yeah, they don't like that. They don't like that.
I mean, there's been a lot of speculation as to gatekeepers in general and to why. I know the Vuitton video has been circulating a ton, which I was there, but I didn't even see you there. Yeah. But I saw the video of you and Zendaya coming up to the front row. Mm-hmm. What actually happened? Yes.
So we left on time, but I don't know if our driver went the wrong way, but we got stuck in traffic. Mm-hmm. And it was also the way we came in. I don't know if this was for you, but it was a long walk. So it was a lot of anxiety, because Zendaya is really respectful and she doesn't like people to have to wait on her. And so it was just anxiety. And so the Vuitton team were like shuffling us as fast as possible to the seats. And so what happened was, we have to remember that we just came from a house where she was the only face, the only ambassador, and everything And even for years, like, I'm always used to sitting next to her. And so in my mind, my seat was next to her. And so when I got there and it wasn't, you know, it wasn't a problem, but there was nobody to tell me where my actual seat was. Mm-hmm. Right. And so the seat behind her, when you see her turn around and touch the seat, it wasn't her telling me to sit there. It was her telling me, like, that's Darnell's seat, which is her assistant. I'm not going to sit in Darnell's seat. You know what I mean? So then where does he go? Right. And so I was standing there. I was really just kind of confused. And remember, we had just made a mad dash to get there. So it's anxiety, like, you sweating. I got the suit on, the hair, the wig, you know, we hot, you know, trying to make it. And so that was the thing, was because I'm coming from a house that I know where my seat is, right? It's right next to her. It's always right next to her because that's part of our relationship and our interaction, seeing the clothes together and the you know, the little cues and a little touch, like, that's the look, you know? And so somebody was like, Law, you have to sit. And I was like, I don't know where I'm sitting. Right. I don't know where I'm sitting. And that became really tough because, one, it made people think that Zendaya wasn't taking care of me and wasn't making sure I wasn't taken care of. And then it became this thing with Delphine Arnault. And I was like, where did that come from? And so now I have a beef with LVMH, and there's no beef with LVMH. You know, Delphine and the Arnault family have been so kind to me. Like, even after the show, we once said at the party, like, I had a whole conversation with her and, you know, congratulated her on her move to Dior, and, you know, and just like, she sent me a beautiful bag, and it's like, there's no beef. And I think also that play into, because everybody thinks that I have this beef. I'm just beefing with LVMH for what people think, which is crazy. But this beef from the Anya Taylor-Joy thing, and me kind of standing up for myself against Dior. I had collaborated with Dior on a couple dresses for Anya. When the looks came out, it was very much, you know, no credit to the stylist. People had to understand, when we do customs for clients, there's a process, right? It's a back and forth. It's a collaboration between the designer, the atelier, and us, right? Because we are the liaison between them for the client and to make sure that they're happy, because we know what they want more than the house does, right? And so I had worked really hard on looks for Anya. And so they came out and it was just like, oh, you know, this took 40 hours and this fabric and all that and this design, and they showed a sketch and all that. And I was just like, I felt a certain type of way, and not just for myself, that we don't erase me. Don't erase me. Don't erase my contribution to this look and to this dress. Don't erase, you know, me, all the phone calls and emails and text messages and going back and forth and me working to make sure that my client was happy, right? Don't erase that. And when I did do that, like, I got so many DMs for other styles, like, thank you for doing that, because they did the same thing to me, or they've been doing the same thing to me for years. And my biggest thing, and anybody who knows me knows, like, I don't mind being the first or taking a hit from something to make sure that people don't have to go through the same things. And when I say people, I mean Black people. It is my everything to make sure that people who look like me get to benefit off the fight, right?
But I think you have to understand, I mean, even you publicly saying, hey, Dior, you need to give me credit, that takes a lot of bravery.
It takes a lot of bravery because, again, LVMH is very powerful in this industry. And I had to be okay and have no fear to say, it's just not right. It's not right. For award season, all that, we get dresses from houses and we take the dresses apart. We take the dresses apart. Like, we add here, take this, do that. And there should be some appreciation for that. And they should also pay us for that. Right. It's work. And you should pay us a rate that is attractive and shows your gratitude. You know, like, we should be paid for that. We all should be paid for that. It's work. it's work. Why should we do it for free because it's this big house? No, it's that's not the way it should work. And the one thing about me, I've said this before, I need to know what the rate is. What's the rate, you know?
Have you had situations like this with other brands where you feel like they weren't giving you the respect that you deserve?
No, I haven't. I had the most incredible time and working relationship with Valentino. With Pia Paolo, he has no ego. He is a true talent with no ego. And every single time, every time we did something, the first thing it would be thank you, Law, tag, luxury Law, text messages, flowers. You know, never. I never had that with anybody else.
Yeah. I mean, as Black people in fashion, we have to deal with so many gatekeepers, and outwardly, I think it's frustrating because the industry says we love inclusivity, we love diversity, we love all these things, but there are so few of us that actually have an understanding of what it's like behind the scenes. Yeah. What has your experience been like in trying to get past the gatekeepers?
Some people don't care, right? Some of the gatekeepers, they don't care about the clothes, right? You know, if it's an agent, manager, publicist, some of them don't care. They like, you know, we trust you, she trusts you. As long as she happy, I don't care. But then there's some that want to come to the fitting and want to have an opinion and, you know, want to pick the dress or say that that's not the right dress and all that. And I don't work like that. My work is proven. And if you are a girl that wants to tell a story or have a huge moment or then you come to me like, and everybody knows that. Everybody knows my work and everybody knows what my work does and how that impacts someone's career. Honestly, some people like, I don't care. You know what I mean? And they're like, I'm doing other things. Like I'm managing this press tour. Like I'm setting up these interviews and, you know, I'm making sure all this has, and other person like, we're working on a deal or whatever. I don't care about clothes. And I'm not going to the publicist and saying, did you make sure that she has that interview on the BBC. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I'm not trying to do your job, so don't try to do mine, you know? Mm-hmm. And I'm very outspoken to say that, like, no, you can't come to the fitting, you know, unless the client was like, oh, I really want, but if it's someone like, what time is the fitting? I'm going to show up. No, you're not, you know, because you're not a stylist. Right. You're not a stylist. Yeah. I'm not a publicist. So our job shouldn't overlap in that way. Your job is to let me know the schedule, and my job is to take the schedule and make sure that I have all the clothes and the client feels beautiful. And why does it have to be more than that? It's, especially with me, I just always feel like these people want to control me. And it's also the feeling of, you know, this is the worst. And this also happens when I'm working with non-Black talent. It's this emotion of I'm supposed to be grateful because I'm dressing the white girl, you know, I'm supposed to be grateful. But I'm like, no, she's supposed to be grateful that she's working with me because I'm changing her life. You know, like, and I mean that as humbly as possible, but like, it can't be debated. Yeah. Like, it can't be debated. I'm one of the only stylists that really actually changes and helps change the trajectory of people's careers through fashion.
Embracing nature is more than just going for a walk now and then. It's reconnecting with the elements. It's harnessing the power of natural ingredients. It's putting the earth first. For over 50 years, Nature's Sunshine has been sharing the healing power of nature as they work towards a healthier planet. Their manufacturing facility is 100% powered by sunlight, and they divert 95% of waste away from landfills. If you're looking for a sustainably made herbal supplement, you might want to check out Nature's Sunshine and their new power line. Power Beets are a superfood performance booster that can help enhance both performance and blood flow. And Power Meal is a satisfying protein-packed superfood shake that comes in sustainable packaging made with nearly 40% post-consumer recycled plastics. Now that's something you can feel good about. This Earth Month, you can enjoy 25% off your first order with code NSP. Just go to naturesunshine.com. That's naturesunshine.com and use code NSP for 25% off your first order.
And let's go back to 5 years ago. Mm-hmm. You probably don't remember, but it's already 5 years ago. Mm-hmm. When I did the Black in Fashion piece. Mm-hmm. And we talked for hours on the phone about just how you were feeling then. And I wanted to quote back to you something, because my goal in that piece was obviously talking about the industry is saying that we're so progressive and not much has changed. And the piece you talked about, there's a need for Black talent to work with Black creatives, how the cycle of publicists hiring the same stylist perpetuates this idea that only certain people can help your career. 5 years later, do you feel like racism in the industry has really even changed or shifted?
I mean, 5 years later, I literally just made that same point. it's a club, right? It's these women that have been working with each other for 20 years. And, you know, the thing about it is that I won't say that it's always racism, right? To be really honest with you. People like to work with people they're comfortable with. But if you are a person of privilege, of power, you have to be okay to release that every now and again, right? You have to be able to be secure enough to give somebody who doesn't look like you an opportunity. And that's what doesn't happen, right? They want to work with the same stylist and say, and we get it, right? You're comfortable. You know the job is going to get done. But if you are really going to be progressive and forward thinking and not be a part of the problem, you have to release some of that power. And that's the only way that the dynamic and the landscape of what I do is going to change. Some of these white stylists have to say, you know what? That's not for me. This Black girl who I don't understand her body or her hair texture or all this, it's not right for me. Let's give it to someone who we know can do the job and let's give it to them. But that's not the way it works, because it's a money thing, right? So they don't want to release that, and they don't want to release the power to really be your ally and to really stand strong to all these things that people have been talking about. You have to release some of that power. You have to make the decision to say, this ain't for me. This ain't for me. This would be better there. Because a lot of times you see them, these women, and if the women aren't, you know, sample size or small or have a body type that they didn't grow up with, it's never good. You got to let that go. If you're going to be a true ally, and again, be forward thinking and progressive in the thinking, you have to give the opportunity to someone who doesn't look like you.
I do want to bring up something since we're talking about the press. We talked about Priyanka Chopra Jonas. Mm-hmm. And specifically, there was a quote in People the other day where she said, I've been told many things that are difficult to hear in my job. The pressure is so intense. You can't really show the chinks in your armor. Someone told me yesterday that I wasn't sample sized. I was hurt and disgusted with my family. And I cried to my husband and my team. And I felt really bad about the fact that I'm not sample sized and that that's a problem. Apparently that most of us are not a sample size, which is a two. And you obviously, you know, have worked with her for the past couple of years. What is it like, though, when you read things like that in the press?
It was a little bit hurtful in a way that it ended up in the press, you know, because that wasn't the real conversation. That was I've never had that conversation with her ever. I'm never known for hanging out with my clients. Like, I don't go to dinner. I don't have drinks. Like, I don't do that. Priyanka, it was one of the few that when we traveled, I was always excited to travel with her because I knew we had the most incredible conversations, the most incredible bottles of wine, you know, dinners. I think that Priyanka is one of the most intelligent, interesting women that I've ever worked with, and beautiful. We have the same zodiac. We have the same, like, idiosyncrasies. Like, one day we were together and we both went in our bag and we pulled out the exact same look, Killian, travel spray. I'm like, we are the same fucking person. But I will say that when I came into that situation, I did have a huge problem with the gatekeepers. A huge problem. Wanted to be involved in wanted to pick the dress, you know, was really disrespectful to me. And I thought that we had moved past that. I thought that we had built a relationship where we were really friendly. And I've been working with Priyanka for 4 years. She's technically never been sample size. And I feel like I've gave her some of her strongest and most beautiful looks over this time that we've been working together. So that was kind of hurtful for me that it went to the press. But I'm just like, but you're the same woman that I've been dressing for 4 years and have enjoyed dressing for 4 years. And, you know, and Priyanka has advocated for me, you know, when we did brand things and people didn't want to pay me what I think I deserve. Because this is the one thing, I'm not going to take the same amount of money as hair and makeup because I don't do the same job. Right. And when I'm privy to knowing those rates and I'm like, I'm not doing it because I don't do the same job as them. No disrespect. They pack bags. They come. They do hair. They put on makeup. They repack their bags. They go. I have to prep for days. I have pre-production. I have post-production. I shouldn't get paid the same amount. And Priyanka is one of the clients who always fought for me to get as close to, if not the amount of money that I should be making. So for me to read that and just to feel like I was thrown under the bus in a way was a bit hurtful for me. But also I did have a conversation about clothes with one of her gatekeepers. And I was very honest about, you know, what I was and wasn't going to do. And so I don't know how that was articulated to her or how they took it back to her. But to say that, I guess she's talking about me and said that she was emphasized. I'm like, but you never have been. And that has never been a problem for me. Right. You know, my job is to, and this is what I told the gay people, I'm saying, what I plan on doing is getting the best clothes that I could possibly get. Right. Because she's going on this really, you know, amazing press tour. And my job is to get the best clothes, and the best dress wins. Always, you know? And when there's opportunities for me to do custom, like I put her in the Robert Roone before any of the girls was doing it. Like that was custom, you know what I mean? Like, so I work really hard, and it's just like, it was a bit hurtful. But I also don't know the way they presented my words to her. Maybe I hurt her, or what they told her hurt her, you know? And, you know, maybe it did make her emotional or whatever, because we have this bond, but it's the gatekeepers. So you'll see, if I'm not working with her, you'll see what the person who will work with her looks like. Right. And it's not going to look like me, I'll tell you that.
Well, obviously not.
Yeah.
Yeah. What are some of these narratives that you feel like people have perpetuated about you in the industry? Because I know you were saying that, you know, you felt like specifically the PR teams are really difficult to work with.
Mm-hmm. Not all of them.
Not all of them, so, but can be difficult when you're communicating with talent.
Directly.
What are some of the narratives that you have experienced or you feel like have happened behind the scenes that people don't realize?
It's the, I'm difficult, I'm a diva, I'm my own celebrity, so I'll never really have time for you. I'm nasty, I'm mean. But again, I first of all, my last name is Roach. I've always been a very feminine boy, right? Growing up, I've always had to defend myself. I've always had to fight, and that has never left me, right? So if I feel disrespected in any type of way, I'm ready for a fight. A lot of people on that side of the industry, they don't understand that. So when that happens, oh, he's difficult. You know, he's a diva, or he's disrespectful, or something like that. But it's like, no, it's my defense mechanism. If I feel attacked, I'm going to attack back. You know, I've never learned the diplomacy of like, oh, well, just let it go. It's like, no, if I hear you saying something or you're doing this thing, I'm going to call you and say, hey, what's up? Like, what are you doing? Like, no, that's not true. And that's what I was doing on the phone, that phone call that kind of like pushed me over the edge. It's like, why? I'm defending myself and telling this woman, like, you're lying to my client. And this is the way we lose clients. But in this turn of events, it's the reason why the client lost me. I shouldn't have to do that. I shouldn't have to always defend myself.
Right.
Yeah.
And what do you feel like when you have tried to work with clients and tell them, you know, I don't, this is the way that I work, or if, you know, we've talked about, you said, you know, an agent calling me saying I'm late or different things like that. Yeah. What has it been like to try to communicate and defend yourself when you know that your counterparts, other stylists don't have to deal with that at all?
It's really tough. And it's like, I never feel protected. You know, I mean, I have certain clients that is like, just leave him alone. You know, like, leave him alone, let him work. He doesn't work in a traditional sense. Let him be the artist that he is. And when it's that, you can look at the work and know who are the clients that let me create. I remember with Celine Dion one day, she pulled me to this house. She said, if anybody ever tries to stagger you or your creativity, let me know, because I want you to fly. Same thing with Zendaya. You know, people think that she wears whatever I want. She doesn't. It's a collaboration. But if I say, Zendaya, my spirit says this is the dress, she'll say this is the dress. You know, it's only so many that really give me that. And those are the ones that the work becomes iconic and legendary and people talk about it, because it's the synergy that I need, and it's the ability and the allowance to be able to fly, right? It's always the best.
Being able to do that, though, you're obviously putting so much time and energy into those looks and the relationships with people. And we were talking before this about how a lot of other stylists don't have to hustle or work as hard. Financially, like, what has that been like to know, you know, and to fight for your pay equity to say, look, this is what I deserve, or what have you heard about other stylists and what they're making versus?
Yeah, I'll tell you a story about that. So I was doing a job and there was a couple other stylists on the same job. And so it got back to me that one of the stylists was making probably like $5,000 more than me. Couldn't take it away from anybody at work, but I know the way I work. I know the impact that my work has, like, social and you know, just the impact of, you know, what this look and the picture means financially and how it equates to, you know, marketing dollars and all that. And I know that I bring more to the table when it comes to that than a lot of other people. And so when I found out that she was making $5,000 more than me, I went to my agent and he said, oh, I just can't believe that. And I think what happens in this country that it's instinctual that we're not worth as much. And so I told him, I said, you have to understand what you just said to me and what that means to me as a Black person, because I didn't ask you to believe it. I asked you to get me the same amount or more. You know, I am worth just as much or more than her. There has been programming in this country that we don't deserve the same amount or the same pay. And it's across the industries, period. And so once I explained it to him, he felt really, really bad. And it's like, I didn't mean it that way. I just didn't. She's not the same type of level. But when I'm telling you, I've heard from a credible source. I've seen the deal memo. You know, this industry is also shady, right? I've seen the demo. And so I'm not telling you I feel like she's making more money than me. I'm telling you that I know she's making more money. And for you to say you don't believe it, you don't have to believe it, because I'm showing you the proof. Yeah. So what your job is as my protector is to go and say, hell no, we're not taking that. But that's this country, right? We are still fighting to show that we are worth just as much or more than them.
Yeah. And what do you feel like when you've had the conversations with people of knowing that, you know, you're dressing 10, 11 clients in one night and then others do one and they're making millions of dollars? Like, what is that like?
I mean, it's the same thing that we've been doing as Black people for the last, 300 years, right? Still trying to make a space for ourselves, still trying to make spaces for people that's coming behind us. It's the same thing. It's just fashion, right? It's no different than any other industry. It's no different than the fight of, you know, Black actresses fighting to make the same amount and the same salaries as their white counterparts. It's the same thing. It's like, it's no different for us, right? But I think in fashion and especially styling, in Hollywood, people advocate for themselves up, right? So an actress will advocate for herself. She will advocate for a producer. She'll advocate for a director, but they don't advocate down. They don't say, let's make sure the costume designer is doing this, is making this amount of money. Or let's make sure that, you know, the person at Crafty, you know, looks like us or has a chance to do this. These are all jobs that people need to take care of their family, but no one's advocating down, you right? And so my whole thing is I want to advocate down, right? Like, I don't want to just advocate for myself. I want to make sure that when I'm on a set that there's someone on the production team that's working that looks like me, or the photo team that's working and that looks like me, or the PAs, or, you know, something. So I don't have a problem using whatever this power or platform I have to advocate not just myself and across the board, but down as well. When you get a real ally at a brand, you know, and it's happened to me a bunch of times where they're like, oh, well, just to let you know, not trying to be messy, but such and such, such and such, you know, this is what they made. And, you know, Law, we think that you did a better job. Yeah.
What would you say is one of the most racist experiences or things that's happened to you working on set or in fashion?
Early on, I used to be privy to, like, emails where they'd be like, well, who's this black boy? You know, stuff like that. When I really first started getting invited to the shows, when I would be sitting in front, because I was so excited, I was early. You know, I didn't know, like, oh, this show's going to be 30 minutes late. Like, I'm on time, I'm sitting, I'm waiting, very excited, very grateful. And the PR person would come and say, can I see your ticket? Or somebody would be sitting in the wrong seat and they automatically come to me and say, I need you to get out of that seat. That's not your seat. And I'm like, but it is my seat. You know, and then I'll say, well, why did you pass everybody else to get to me? Because I guess the black boy can't be sitting front row. And you know, the dynamic has changed with that front row over these last few years. It used to be, yeah. I mean, it's still not a lot, but it used to be a few. It used to be Edward, you know, Jenke maybe, you know, it was not that. So when they saw me, I had to be the front row crasher. Like, I just had to be. Like, I would watch, and I would know what they were doing. I would watch them walk past everybody else. You know, you'll see, and it still kind of happens. You know, now the main person be like, they'll run over and basically be like, are you fucking crazy? That's Law Rose. You know what I mean? And I'll just sit there. But yeah, like, for years when I started going to the shows, especially in Europe, they have a way of making you feel like that you're not supposed to be there.
Yeah. Do you feel like you've gotten to a point where you feel appreciated?
I do feel appreciated. And me announcing my retirement has kind of strengthened that for me. I do by younger people who look like me. My career, I'm happy with what I've done. I'm happy with the accomplishments. I'm happy that I have been able to be a reference point of a successful black man in this industry in styling. Because I didn't have a reference point. And people can make the comparison with Andre, but it's really no comparison between my work and my career and what he did. So now this younger generation and all my fashion babies have a real reference point to say, oh, well, Law was able to do that, so I know I can do it. Because, you know, representation is everything, yeah. Right? And, you know, I was still chasing this white woman's career and that dream. And now people can say, oh, I want to be able to do what Law did, you know? So that, yes, I feel appreciated.
Yeah. Has there been a time where you regret speaking up or you regret not speaking up?
I think not more than speaking up, like, because, you know, again, like, it is what it is. And I feel like because I am from where I'm from, I can always go back and, you know, I'll always find somewhere to be successful, right? If I choose to go to medical school and be a dentist, I'll be the very fucking best dentist. Until you put your life or livelihood on the line, then you're not that. Everybody, especially when we were going through the Black Lives Matter movement in George Floyd, everybody became a, you know, I'm an advocate for this and for that. And people start to put that tag on me. And I'm like, until you put your life or livelihood on the line, then you are not that. You are just somebody who are throwing out your opinion, mm-hmm. right? And so this last few years, I feel like I can take more ownership in that because I have put my livelihood on the line to say certain things and to stand up for myself.
So what's going to happen with all your clients now?
They're going to find a new stylist. And people are saying like, oh, you're not going to leave Zendaya. You're not going to not style just Zendaya. But I don't have to style Zendaya to be a part of her team and her creative team, right? So maybe if I choose, you know, not to be her stylist, I can still be her creative director and I can still, you know, manage a stylist or however I choose to. I haven't made a decision and she's given me the grace to be able to make that decision because we really have a kinship. Like, you know, we've grown up together. And that's all I ever asked was for people who I work so hard for to just give me grace when I need it.
Outside of her, everybody is going to have to find a stylist.
Everybody's going to have to find another stylist. Just get somebody else to do it. And you know what, Lindsay? Honestly, when my 3-year-old nephew died, I never felt anything like that before, right? And I think that also has been pushing this retirement because it kind of made me understand that I had no other priorities other than my work because when he passed away, he was 3 and I had only been able to see him maybe, I saw him when he was born, I saw him on Christmas one time and then I saw him around our birthday. So I had only been able to see him 3 times in his whole life. And so when I started to think about all the joy from being around kids and not being able to ever know who he would be. And, you know, I don't want kids, but I do want to always have an opportunity to help raise kids. Mm-hmm. I was on the verge of suicide, honestly. The guilt of not being in his life enough and not really knowing him enough had put me into a really dark depression. And I had never been depressed in my life, so my brain couldn't really understand what was happening. And it was just all this guilt. And then I don't have a strong relationship with his father, which is my brother. So then I was guilty because I didn't know how to love him. I didn't know how to support him and to love him because we never had a real strong relationship. And so then I was guilty because of that, because my brother was suffering and, you know, and suicidal and I didn't know how to help him. So that gave me more guilt. And dealing with this new thing, depression I had never dealt with. And then, you know, I had a client whose manager, he died a day before Thanksgiving. Mm-hmm. And, you know, then we go into, and so I was on a retainer with a client and his manager, and I never forget this. His manager said, oh yeah, but you really didn't do anything in December. And I didn't say anything, but it kind of haunts me that people don't see me sometimes as human and that I don't deserve grace, you know? So that toughed me. So it's been a lot of little things that's been happening over the last couple of years that have been pushing me towards this decision of retiring. you know, I need to learn how to give myself grace, and I need to learn how to let people know that I am human. Because I've been able to be in two or three places at the same time. Like, I've mastered that, you know, in my own little way. And I need to figure out, you know, how to love me, and how to accept love, and how not to suffer.
Yeah, that's a big one. I mean, we saw you last night walking mm-hmm. at the Boss Show. Congratulations.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
What else do you have coming up? Which I know the Boss thing was a long time in the works, which people thought it was random.
People thought it was a PR stunt that I was retiring so that I could walk in the Boss Show. I'm like, people, you have to understand that's been 4 or 5 months in the making. And, you know, they were really kind, but it was like, well, you know, if you don't think you can do it, you know, we understand if you pull out. And I say, I'm a Black little gay boy. I've been learning how to walk in heels and pumps since I was 6. You know what I mean? Like, no, I'm ready for this show. And you know what was the most beautiful thing about it? It was about me. And I felt like it was about me. And I really felt alive last night because I didn't have to go in somebody else's dressing room and get them dressed and or make sure that I had everything or my assist. It was... They made it. It was about me. It was about me as Law. And I felt almost born again, to be honest with you. I was so happy last night. I woke up this morning to get on my flight and I had forgot what joy felt like. And I'm very grateful to them.
I think people can look at your life and see, okay, you get to sit front row, you get to work with all these celebrities, you get clothes, all these fabulous things, but what does it feel like internally now?
You know, I said reflect, like none of that was for me though. You know, me, you, and as a stylist, you only as good as your last look. So when I go to the shows and all that, that's work. That's not for me. You know, that's for ammunition in a way to go out and to kill that next look. Cause I'm only as good as the people I dress, and I'm only as good as my last look. And that's a lot of pressure.
And now you feel that pressure is lifted.
I do. Mm. I feel last night and this morning, I feel so free. Like I feel a freedom that I don't remember ever feeling. And no matter what, you know, if I come back, which I don't have plans on coming back, you know, I have plans on doing other things, you know, like collaborations with brands and, even my Hervé Léger collaboration, like I look at that and I say that it could have been so much better, but I also dress 11 clients. So everything for me, it's always secondary to them. And I was like, I looked at it and it made me sad. I was like, if I had more time and more attention to pour this, it would have been more successful than it was. You know, but everything is client first. Right. Yeah.
So no Met Gala.
No Met Gala. Canceled.
So what is this next era gonna be like for you? What are you excited about?
You know, so many other things I want to do. I got a book deal a year ago and I have not been able to. I have a deadline that's coming up really, and I have had no time to work on it at all. Mm-hmm. It hasn't been announced yet, but I've been made the creative director of a brand, mm-hmm. a footwear brand, so I'm excited about that, because now I really get to create in a different type of way. Mm-hmm. You know, I want to do more personality driven stuff. So you might see me doing red carpet correspondence because I never had a chance to do it, because how can I be a correspondent when I've got 11 people at the Met Gala, you know? And I hope people start to see me more as me, as Law, as the person, and, you know, and I want to do more things like with Boss. You know, maybe somebody invite me to the Met. Because every time I've been, it's been, you know, I went with Zendaya, but it was with Zendaya. I went, you know, I curated that table for Lewis Hamilton, but that was for Lewis Hamilton. And, you know, so I want to do things and use my personality. No, I might have a talk show or a podcast or, you know, anything. I just want to prove to myself that I can do more than be of service to other people. I feel alive, Lindsay. Like, and I know it's only been a couple of days, but I feel alive. Like, you know, and I keep using the word suffering because it's the only word that I can, like, I don't have any friends. Like, I don't have any relationships. Like, everything that could bring me joy has been suppressed because of the work. And for a long time, and I just was masking it and hiding it and being this persona of, you know, luxury La Roche, this stylist, and not realizing that I was miserable. So I just want to breathe. I want to fly. I want to be happy. I want to figure other things out, you know? And I think not doing that job is going to give me the time and an ability to just try some other stuff. And if I fail at everything else, then I fail at everything else. We know I'm a good stylist, so shit. I always got a job. Somebody give me a job somewhere, you know? But yeah.
I'm happy for you.
Thank you.
Thank you for doing this.
Thank you for having me.
Of course.
Yeah.
In Her Shoes is hosted by me, Lindsay Peoples. Our lead producer is Taka Zen, our engineer is Brendan McFarlane, and our executive producer is Hannah Rosen. Special thanks to Dania's House. I'm Lindsay Peoples, and thank you so much for listening.
Celebrate Earth Month this April by harnessing the power of Mother Nature with Nature's Sunshine's new power line. From Power Greens with over 200 plant-based nutrients to support gut health and foundational nutrition, to Power Beets that can improve performance and blood flow. Not to mention Power Meal, which delivers plant-based calories from whole foods to help keep you both energized and feeling satisfied throughout the day. This Earth Month, you can enjoy 25% off your first order with code NSP. Just go to naturesunshine.com. That's naturesunshine.com and use code NSP for 25% off your first order.